Now, last week, the Christian God was on this program to say that he did not exist. My name is Allah. I don't exist either, and you're listening to the San Diego Seculars.
Hey everybody, this is Jason Fry, and you're listening to San Diego Seculars. I'm the president of the Humanist Association of San Diego, and I'm going to make this a bit of a short one this week. I'm trying to podcast every week, and I'm still getting it under the wire. Soon I will be recording these every Sunday, putting them out every Monday. That's one of the things I want to do with the Humanist Association. Actually, tomorrow we have a board meeting, and we're going to be talking a lot about what we're planning on doing. And, you know, we're doing a lot. In the next 15 months, we do podcast, coffee and conversation, book clubs, special meetings, special lectures. We're going to be flying in a bunch of bigger named secularist, atheist, and other humanists into town this year. And looking at it, our budget's going to be about $17,000 to accomplish all the good things we want to accomplish. So I'll be plugging and asking you guys for money probably soon. But I think you guys are really going to like it, and I have a really cool speaker coming to town for the 12th of January, and I'll let you guys know about it once everything is confirmed, but something really cool is going to happen, and I think you'll like this speaker a lot. Anyway, so to get started with some news, like I said, I want to make this kind of short. In the last week, we did Coffee and Conversation, and we also did a book club. At Coffee and Conversation, we talked about basic news, politics, that type of thing. And the book club, we did George William Foote's Prisoner for Blasphemy. And so I want to go into the stuff we talked about at Coffee and Conversation, then I want to go into the book club, and then I will let you guys go on your merry way, and hopefully we'll see you tonight at the Bamboo Lounge Tea Deli, 1469 University Avenue. 6 o'clock. So, a bunch of us, I personally wasn't there because I was busy working in Coffee and Conversation for last week, but a bunch of us went down to the Creation Museum to hear creationist Ray Comfort. Basically, apparently, he was trying to get clips of trying to stammy atheist or something. I don't know. But apparently, somebody had mentioned, someone from our side had mentioned there was a contradiction in the New Testament, and it was involving what Judas had done with the 30 pieces of silver, whether he bought the land or someone else did or something like that. And Ray Comfort apparently said, well, that's not true. And the guy said, well, yes, it is. And Ray Comfort said, I'll give you $100 if it's true. And he pointed out the guy got $100. I personally don't think that science is a good way to argue with people who are arguing religion. Those are two different languages. Those are two different ways of thinking. When you're talking science, you have to understand that there are a lot of really smart scientists who are religious, and there are a lot of atheists who don't know a damn thing about science. And what are we talking about when we're talking about religion? Well, we're talking about cherished ideas. We're talking about fixed points of consistency that people can attach themselves to, you know, sacred histories, sacred spaces, this thing called the Axis Mundi. And so, the pivot of the world. And so when we're talking to religious people, if it were strictly science, we have some really good science. And if science was that compelling, there would be no, you know, it would probably sway 99% of the religious people out there. But there are other things, you know, people say they need that sort of meaning attached to these religious ideas, that type of meaning that it applies to their, that they can apply their lives around. And I don't know. As a secular humanist, we have secular naturalistic morality, and I've talked about that a bunch. But I thought it was interesting. I'm personally not that interested in going to places like creation museums and, you know, hearing why Jesus had a pet dinosaur, so we should be against gay marriage by a bunch of junior college level theologians. I've studied under some really brilliant religious people, and they would just laugh at these people, you know. And at the same time, these whole ideas using religion, using science to bolster these religious ideas that that legitimate religious scholars would not touch with a 10-foot pole, basically because the evidence is overwhelming for a 4.7 billion year old Earth. Looking at this, I don't know, do we just endorse them by showing up? Do we give them greater weight by listening to them? Because, I don't know, I'm kind of rambling at this point. But I guess in summation of that idea, I just am not really interested in hearing a bunch of low-grade, unsophisticated theology by people who have false attributions of causation. I want to be uplifted. I personally need something more. And when it comes to looking at theology and looking at religion, I personally think there are certain things that we can get from it. There are certain life lessons, but it's the same thing with other forms of mythology, sagas, legends, and it's part of the canon of human history and human experience. So when we look at it, you know, I won't say Moses would be an upright role model. You know, I wouldn't say that Abraham is someone we should build our lives around his example. If we do, he's more of a cautionary tale. And I don't know, maybe I'm just rambling at this point. But some cool things. So if you are a parent or you know some kids, watch out for this. Tell them not to do the salt and ice challenge. The salt and ice challenge is that latest pain endurance thing that's hitting the internet, sort of like the cinnamon challenge before it, et cetera, et cetera. And essentially, kids are putting salt on their skin and then pressing an ice cube to it. And with that, they are getting pretty bad freezer burns. So look out for that. On top of that, in California, something cool happened. Governor Jerry Brown signed into law a state bill that is now going to allow for self-driving cars. So there still has to be a person in the driver's seat. And then lastly, for things to look out for, starting in November 2013, there's going to be a massive comet that is going to be in the solar system, within the near proximity to the Earth in relation to the rest of the solar system, and it's going to light up the night sky. Apparently, it's going to be more radiant than the full moon, and it's really cool. And also, it ends today, but this was also Banned Books Week. I hope that you like banned books. I hope that we can stand up and just say freedom of expression over intolerant obfuscation by orthodoxy. And then Blasphemy Day, of course, was last Sunday. I hope that you blasphemed appropriately and with gusto. My thing about blasphemy is we need blasphemy. We need blasphemy because it is a way to remind the religious establishment the dangers of obsolescence if they don't keep up with the needs of people today. On top of that, we did our book club. Our book club was Prisoner for Blasphemy. Prisoner for Blasphemy was an account of George William Foote, who published the first publisher of the British Freethought magazine called The Freethinker. And George William Foote lived from 1850 to 1915. He was affiliated with the Secular Society's Charles Bradlaugh, and he published, like I said, The Freethinker. And in publishing The Freethinker, the government started cracking down on him for libelous blasphemy, and then he kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and then what really got him in trouble was not putting out something that just demeaned the Bible. He actually put out reproduced images from an old Dutch Bible. One of them in particular was a scene where Moses saw Yahweh's backside. And so Prisoner for Blasphemy was George William Foote's book on the matter. It was his memoir of it. And in the book, he examined blasphemy laws. And I'm trying to remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of he was charged with endangering the queen's crown and dignity. And he said he found it odd that the queen's crown and dignity could be imperiled by an act of anyone other than herself. And he looked at freedom of religion and freedom of expression, and he said that blasphemy laws are the last act of religious persecution. And I think that this is particularly prescient today when we look at situations like the Innocence of Muslims film. Eric Allen Bell, for example, a white American from Tennessee, started criticizing Islam, and now he's in hiding. And I don't know, my whole thing on this is if you propel an idea as though it's some form of universal truth, then it should be truth universal to everybody. And if it's truth universal to everybody, if you say that your God is omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent, then that can be challenged. And at the same time, why would you bother doing God's dirty work? You know, it almost seems like a terrible lack of sincerity when someone would go out and presume to. And so I guess I want to go for what George William Foote said on this. Foote said that the theologians who act like God is a man who lived down the street aren't even a fraction as bad as those who presume to be God's bodyguards. And people who presume to be God's bodyguards are quite riled up at the moment. Foote also asked the question. He asked the question, why is blasphemy okay only in expensive texts? And he looked at that. He said, the rich and powerful are insulated, and so they get to say what they want. But people who aren't so rich and powerful, they suffer the full brunt of an oppressive government force. I really liked this book. This book, it sort of reminded me, because George William Foote was a polemicist, a freethinker, a journalist, and quite renowned in his day. He sort of reminded me of, or I guess I shouldn't say he reminded me, it seems as though Christopher Hitchens is the George William Foote of the 20th century. Anyway, I thought that was really cool. And then I want to go over the book real quick. In it, he said, this little volume tells a strange and painful story. Strange because the experience of a prisoner for blasphemy are only known to three living Englishmen, and painful because their unmerited sufferings are a sad reflection on the boasted freedom of our age. And then he writes, blasphemy laws survive as a dangerous weapon in the hands of any fool or fanatic who likes to set them in motion. And blasphemy is our old friend heresy in disguise, and that, we know, is a priestly manufacture. He also writes, the act categorized heterodoxy as blasphemy, but says nothing about the language in which it may be couched. And so I think that that is an important idea, because it's this whole arbitrary idea of people saying it's the context of what you say, not how you say it. And I think I talked about this before when I brought up what Sean Faircloth, the Richard Dawkins Foundation, said about the innocence of Muslims. Well, what happens if what you say when you criticize celebrated religious and public figures, what happens if what you say is true? Because the truth is a defense. And so Eric Allen Bell, going on Fox News, calling Muhammad a pedophile for engaging in sex with his 9-year-old wife. He married her at 6, Aisha, and consummated at 9. So he goes on there, and look at what's happening to him now. And then further, in the preface, George William Foote writes, persecution, like superstition, dies hard, but it dies. In the first chapter, he writes, yes, the war with superstition must be fought a outrance. We must decline either treaty or truce. I hold that the one great work of our time is the destruction of theology, the immemorial enemy of mankind, which is wasted in the chase of chimeras, very much of the world's best intellect, fatally perverted our moral sentiments, fomented discord and division, supported all of the tyranny of privilege, and sanctioned all debasement of the people. Far be it from me to argue this point with any dissident. I prefer to leave him to the logic of events, which has convinced me and may someday convince him. And then he goes forward, he says, superstition dislikes argument but hates laughter. And then I thought that this is particularly important. And this is something that sort of sculpted my activism. And it's, freethinkers should now devote themselves to cultivating the fields they had won instead of raiding into enemy's territory. And I think about that. And I think that this is particularly interesting, because I think that secular humanist ethics are the best ethics we have. Not because they're the least evil of all other options, but because they're good and they work. And they recognize the inherent moral equality of all people on an equal playing field without higher entities coming in and screwing things up. And so looking at that, it may be fun to go argue with religious people, which it can be, but at the same time, we have something damned good. And I think we should concentrate on that and meditate on this idea that as free thinkers, we should cultivate our own field rather than simply raiding enemy territory. And looking at the three trials that George William Foote went into, he was essentially railroaded in the first two. And George William Foote says it was a foregone conclusion. The prosecution played heads I win, tails you lose. And going forward a bit, he brings up in the third chapter that blasphemy in one country is piety in another. And he brings up a little irony. And the irony he brings up is, we were charged with blasphemy, and so was Jesus Christ. What a grim joke it would be if the Freethinker, that's the publication, is found guilty and punished for the same crime as the preacher of the Sermon on the Mount. Truly, adversity makes us acquainted with strange bedfellows. And so he was indicted for blasphemy. And he says, blasphemy is not a crime of obloquy against God, but of breaching the peace. And he brings up the fact that out of 28 folios of material, only 3 sentences were penned by himself. And he writes on this, to punish a man not because he has injured others, but for his own good is the worst form of persecution. And that by the test of the prosecution, both the Bible and Shakespeare could be found obscene. And what I said a moment ago about these people presuming themselves to be God's bodyguards, I think George William Foote said that incredibly eloquently. And he said, and what presumption on the part of these pygmies to undertake a defense of deity? Surely omnipotence is able to punish as omniscience knows when to punish. The theologians talk familiarly of God as though he were a man living in the next street. And they are modest in comparison with his self-elected bodyguard. And so he was rammed through and sent to Holloway Jail. And and then the second trial, he was completely railroaded, sentenced to a year of solid. He was sentenced to a year in Holloway Jail. And at the end of the second trial, when Judge North, who had sentenced him and heard him and basically obfuscated the entire legal process, George William Foote said there was 1,000 things he was thinking of saying to this judge, but he only said one thing, and I thought that this composure was awesome. He looked at the judge and said, thank you, my lord. The sentence is worthy of... Thank you, my lord. The sentence is worthy of your creed. And he makes it through. He does. I'm not going to tell you many other quotes because the book is brimming with good material and it's a great story. And I think you guys will absolutely relish it. I think you guys will just die for this material. It's awesome. It's just so incredible. And especially right now, when we're talking about different countries around the globe trying to push blasphemy laws on us, and President Obama standing up saying, we do not criminalize blasphemy. You know, looking at this whole idea that people in other countries would presume to stifle American free speech. And it wasn't even an American that made that film, The Innocence of Muslims. It was an Egyptian Copt. And this kind of bullying is unacceptable. It's childish. It's barbaric. It's medieval, literally. It's medieval. You know, it's nothing but heresy on a modern scale, you know, via cell phone and Facebook. And I think that's wonderful. Yay, heresy. Heresy, hereticus, Greek, means to choose. Yay, choice. Yay, taking the reins of philosophy and ethics, and then just saying, no, we're not going to be under the thumb of some ancient god mythological figure, and we own this, and we own the dialogue, and it's a shared dialogue, and you're not going to silence or stifle me. I like that. We have to be strong. We have to be brave. And so, more things about blasphemy. Piss Christ, Serrano's Piss Christ, returned to New York, and there weren't any riots. And on top of that, Eddie Tobish of the Center for Inquiry was writing on this. And he wrote about the First Amendment protections of the film, the Innocence of Muslims. And he looks at a couple cases. Eddie Tobish, of course, is a lawyer. And he looks at Reno versus ACLU 1997. And in the case, Reno versus ACLU, it came out that there's no heckler's veto when it comes to free speech. That, and I quote from the article, legal right to say something offensive cannot be abridged just because a listener may react negatively or violently after claiming to be offended. And Eddie Tobish writes, "We secular humanists should always oppose censorship if its purpose is to shield members of any group from being offended. Our very right to disseminate the atheistic aspects of our message would be destroyed if laws could prohibit expressing ideas that deeply offend others." Sorry, there's a motorcycle in the background. They're just hanging out. Okay. All right. Yay, sorry about your small penis. Rev that thing up. Okay. And then, I don't know. I want to quote from Barack Obama's speech at the UN. I thought it was incredibly well stated and it was a necessary charge. America needs to take moral leadership in the protection of free speech, free expression, and the protection of these minority views. Because I brought up Irshad Manji a few minutes ago, and in this questioning about culture, Manji says that when we question culture, the first question is, how are the less influential and most vulnerable members of that culture, how does that culture affect them? And I think there are necessary universal human moral standards that we can apply, such as violence, coercion, opportunity, that type of thing. And so what Obama said at the United Nations General Assembly on this, because there's a lot of talk about putting out blasphemy laws, and Obama said, "We do not blant." Sorry, should I do an Obama? What the hell? I'll do an Obama impersonation. When I, you know, when I bring up someone like Rick Perry, I do a Southern impersonation. So this is my attempt at an Obama impersonation. So forgive me, but I don't know, it might be fun. "We do not ban blasphemy. I know there are some who ask why we don't just ban such a video. The answer is enshrined in our laws. Our Constitution protects the right to practice free speech. Here in the United States, countless publications provoke offense. Like me, the majority of Americans are Christian. And yet, we do not ban blasphemy against our most sacred beliefs. Moreover, as president of our country and commander-in-chief of our military, I accept that people are going to call me awful things every day, and I will always defend their right to do so. Americans have fought and died in wars around the globe to protect the right of all people to express their views, even views that we disagree with. We do so not because we support hateful speech, but because our founders understood that without such protections, the capacity of each individual to express their own views and practice their own faith may be threatened. We do so because in a diverse society, efforts to restrict speech can become a tool to silence critics or oppress minorities. We do so because, given the power of faith in our lives and the passion that religious differences can inflame, the strongest weapon against hate speech is not repression. It is more speech. The voices of tolerance that rally against bigotry and blasphemy and lift up the values of understanding and mutual respect." And you know, I like that. I like that idea of competing ideas in the marketplace of ideas, and that's what this is about. And I don't know, what do you guys think? And so, moving forward, an Egyptian blogger was arrested after his neighbors claimed that he had shared the Innocence of Muslims on Facebook. A mob broke in, kicked his mom and him out of the house. He was attacked by razors, and they threatened to burn the house down with his mother in it if she didn't leave as well. And the Egyptian government has accused him of blasphemy for criticizing Coptic and Islamic leaders, and he is being held without bail. The American Humanist Association was working with the State Department to increase awareness of the issue. And at the same time, the American Humanist Association, which the Humanist Association of San Diego is a chapter of, has asked people to contact the State Department to, you know, put pressure on the Egyptian government to let this guy go. And so moving forward, I thought this was interesting. In the past, there's a lot of cases where children have died because of faith healings rather than taking the kids to a hospital. They go into a diabetic shock, coma, etc., and their parents will do a prayer circle around them, or they won't get an organ transplant. Little things like that, these forms of neglect. And a recent case in Ohio – hold on. All right. Rev up your engine. Rev it up. That's right. Just sit there. Hey. Come on. Yeah, there we go. More greenhouse gases. Okay. Okay. Sorry about that. So, there was a case recently in which a woman tried to prevent her child from being vaccinated, among other things, and she claimed religious exemptions from it. And the U.S. District Court of Northern Ohio came out saying refusal to vaccinate a child on religious grounds fails constitutionally, and it's quote-unquote tantamount to neglect. And the court cited a few cases. It said, it has long been recognized that local authorities may constitutionally mandate vaccinations. And they cited Jacobson versus Massachusetts, 1905, affirming guilty judgment and prosecution under state compulsory vaccination law. Nothing that real liberty for all could not exist under the operation of a principle which recognizes the right of each individual person to use his own blah, 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 regardless of the injury it may be done to others. They also cited one of Jehovah's Witnesses, kids, and child labor laws. That was Prince versus Massachusetts, 1944. And the court wrote, the right to practice religion freely does not include the parental liberty to expose the community or the child to communicable disease. And I think this is really interesting, because regardless of what you feel about vaccination, I think that this is an appropriate use of the law to basically say that you can't thrust around your overused, quote-unquote, religious freedoms in the United States in spite of valid secular law. And I think that we need to keep reiterating that the freedom of religion is not absolute in the United States, and that's wonderful. Because, you know, if it were, then you could mistreat other people that your religious texts would otherwise say are less than human. Gays, people of color, women, etc., etc. And people have tried this, as we all know. People have tried to use these religious texts to do that in the past. And I think this is good. I think that this is wonderful in the fact that it says that religious doctrine is subordinate to valid secular law. And so regardless of what you feel about vaccines, I think that this is a wonderful thing, and it goes towards these other cases in which people will refuse to give their kids appropriate and efficacious medical treatment, such as taking the doctor when they go into a diabetic coma and they die because, you know, God will heal you. If God gives you diabetes, then God can heal you. Otherwise, if you die, it's within God's will, which is essentially resigning yourself from living in the natural world and divorcing yourself from reality. And so the court also wrote that they were granting permanent custody of the child to the county, and they said that though the failure to vaccinate was a reason, it was not the primary reason. It was just a factor. And also, coming soon, the Secular Coalition for America is having its first ever State of Secular America congressional briefing. And a few people on the panel are David Niosi, Greg Epstein, and Ira Lupu. And the questions that the Congress is going to ask the secular Americans are, who are the nuns? What do they bring to the national conversation? How can we better protect their liberties? I think this is really cool. We finally have a place at the table. And, yeah. So, looking forward, let's see. I'm going forward a bit. So, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia refused entry to 1,000 Hajis because they were Nigerian women who were unaccompanied by mahram, which are male escorts. So, the thing in Islam is that by the pillars of Islam, you're required to take a pilgrimage to Mecca if you can afford it at least once in your life. And these women were trying to do so, but since they weren't accompanied by a male escort, they were prevented from entering the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They were sent back. And I don't know. Part of me thinks on this whole issue that if you have such a good and moral religion, then part of it should be that all people should look out for all women everywhere, not just their close male escorts. And there should also be, and I'm not an expert on Islam, but there should, you know, and if there is a religious prohibition against women having the same social equality of men, it should be uplifted and recognized by everybody, not just close male escorts. And then on top of that, coming up, we have, what is it called? I forget the name of it. Something stupid like Pulpit Freedom Day or something this coming Sunday, tomorrow actually. And in that, thousands of churches across the U.S. are going to violate their IRS codes by endorsing partisan candidates. One of them is Jim Garlow at the Skyline Church in eastern San Diego. And Debbie Scomer of the San Diego Coalition Reason is going to be going out there tomorrow with a bunch of people to monitor that church. And it's been said in a few articles and across the blogosphere that the religious right are claiming intimidation by Americans United for the separation of church and state. And this comes because Americans United sent 60,000 letters to houses of worship nationally, reminding them of their IRS requirements. And the Alliance Defense Fund senior legal counsel Eric Stanley came out saying Americans United is attempting to silence pastors through fear. Oh yeah, it's called Pulpit Freedom Sunday. It's tomorrow. And so go check it out. Go to your local church and videotape it. Send it to the IRS. And it's not as though religious organizations aren't ever fined. In fact, Jerry Falwell's old-time gospel hour was fined $50,000 in 1986 and 1987. Pat Robertson's Christian Business News suffered a temporary tax exemption loss during those years. And in 1992, a church in Binghamton, New York, came out with a full-page spread endorsing or slamming Bill Clinton. And they lost their tax-exempt status. And it's interesting, if we look at the Pew polls, according to Pew, 2/3 of Americans oppose houses of worship endorsing political candidates. Also, we talked a little politics. We talked about Constitution Day. It was 2 weeks ago, but I skipped over it accidentally. So we went over and we had fun. I had a sample citizenship test and, you know, we passed. Yay! You know, I like the idea that if you're going to vote, you should be responsible and you should know a thing or two about your country. And we do. I like that. I like the fact that our group got the questions right. You know, what we asked, like 20 questions, 20, 30 questions out of the longer list, and we got them right. Yay. So check it out. I challenge you guys. Call yourselves Americans? Well, think about what people who are aspiring to be Americans have to go through. They have to take the citizenship test. You are a citizen by virtue of birth, more than likely, if you're listening to this. So go out, take the citizenship test, see how you do. And if you don't do so well, just learn, study this country's history. And I don't know, we have a vibrant and thriving history, not as long as certain other countries, but I think that American history is really interesting personally. And if you're a citizen, you know, you shouldn't just merely take advantage of it. You should celebrate it and you should use it to help out your fellow Americans, realizing that you're a member of something substantially good. And at the same time, you should learn what it means to be an American. You should learn about our history and how the system works, because the system can and often does go corrupt when it's not being monitored, and it's not, we're not holding our elected officials up to higher standards. And I don't know, I think things have gone horribly wrong in this country, and the I don't know. I'm rambling at this point, but I'll get through this. Blah 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 blah. Anyway, so a couple other things. Iran's Fars news agency came out directly plagiarizing The Onion, the satirical newspaper The Onion, and they changed just a few words out of the article, but they basically reprinted an article from The Onion, and some of the quotes that were used were 77% of rural white Americans would rather have a beer with Ahmadinejad than Obama. And then also, he takes national defense seriously, said the article, and he'd never let some gay protesters tell him how to run his country like Obama does. And finally, according to the article, it said there was a Gallup poll saying that 60% of rural whites 60% of rural whites said they at least respected that Ahmadinejad doesn't try to hide the fact that he's Muslim. So just a few things. On LGBT news, Governor Jerry Brown of California, my state, kicked down an in vitro fertilization barrier that if you I'll just read what I copied from the article. Knocking down a barrier now ensuring that single people and same-sex couples will have equal access to fertility services provided to opposite-sex couples. The old law required that each donation be tested even from a consistent designated donor, if not from an intimate partner. And then also, the governor signed a bill into law making foster care easier for LGBT youth. And So Malawi's President Joyce Banda came out with a campaign promise saying that she would decriminalize homosexual sex, but she came out saying Malawi is not ready. She wrote, she said, I, as a leader, have no right to influence how people feel. Where Malawi is and most African countries are is maybe where the UK were about 100 years ago. The best thing the world can do is allow each country to take its course, to allow each country to have that debate freely without the pressure of being pushed. And then on top of that, speaking of foreign leaders, the former president of Ireland, Mary McAleese, came out saying about the Vatican. She came out saying that the Vatican's position pushes gay kids to suicide. And she says, I'll say it in an Irish accent, I guess I did the Obama one, so they will have heard words like disorder. They may even have heard the word evil used in relation to homosexual practice. And when they make the discovery, and it is a discovery and not a decision, when they make the discovery that they are gay, when they are about 14, 15, or 16, an internal conflict of absolutely appalling proportions opens up. And then on top of that, Janet Napolitano came out instructing immigration agents to treat same-sex couples as their as the same as their heterosexual counterparts as families and new immigration regulations. Yay. And then on top of that, the Supreme Court did not put Proposition 8 on their syllabus. It may eventually come up, but it was not listed as the cases that they're going to be hearing. But the Supreme Court's list of cases they're not going to be hearing doesn't get released until the 13th of October. So if they're not going to hear Proposition 8, that means the lower court's decision stands, and soon we will have equal marriage back in California. Hooray! And then finally, I'm starting an LGBT Humanist Council in San Diego. We're going to have a meeting very soon. And if you are a supporter of LGBT rights and a supporter of humanist philosophy, come on down. We'll have fun and we'll do good things. And so every week we've been talking about a thing called the 10 Commitments from the Kochar Humanist Education Center, and we talked about ethical development, and I thought it was really cool. I'm getting kind of stressed out. I got to go work on some things for tonight's coffee and conversation, but I've been saying I'll do this weekly, and it might be kind of choppy at times. Soon, very soon, I'll be back in a good schedule. I'm just doing a lot of projects for different groups and that, so kind of busy at the moment. But some cool upcoming things, because I guess this is the commercial time. This is the commercial. I hope you like the commercial. All right, so in October, I said Dale Howell was going to give a speech, but he is not able to make it to town. So, of course, tonight we have coffee and conversation. Next weekend we have coffee and conversation. And next Sunday, the third Sunday of the month, what we have, and this is cool, we're going to do our third annual Logical Fallacy Clinic, where we talk about critical thought and how to pick out logical fallacies and how to not be exploited by them. And so on top of that, our second in our October book club series is Charles Bradlaugh's The Freethinker's Textbook. You don't need to have read it to come, just show up. But if you can read the book, you'll have a better time. In November, we're participating in November 2nd's Light the Night Walk in support of leukemia research. And it'll be great. Come on down to Petco Park. I'll let you know more about that later. November, we're reading Leviathan and the Social Contract. Good month to talk about the social contract, especially because it's the election, though we're going to talk about it after the election. And on the 11th of November, Sunday, the 11th of November, 11 a.m., I am finalizing the venue soon, but we are hosting Secular Coalition for America's Executive Director, Edwina Rogers. Come on down for that, and I'll be releasing the name of the venue very soon once we finalize it. But mark your calendar. It will be Sunday, November 11th at 11 a.m., and we're having our annual Thanksgiving event. Essentially, what we do for that is we have a big potluck. Sometimes someone cooks a turkey, and we all come together in sort of a free thought family Thanksgiving, and we watch blasphemous holiday clips, South Park, that type of thing. And it's a lot of fun. It's a big party. Come on down for that potluck style, and I'll let you know more about that too. And in December, we're reading Why I'm Not a Christian. We are reading and also we're going to read Ibn Warraq's Why I'm Not a Muslim. I think it's a good balance on that. And we're having our annual membership meeting and board elections. And then on the 23rd, speaking with the people from Sidari, they're not meeting on the fourth Sunday in December. So we're going to be borrowing their space and hosting for a second time atheist evangelist Sam Singleton. So those are some upcoming things. Tomorrow, make sure to go to the Skyline Church with Debbie Skomer, the San Diego Coalition for Reason. And check it out. Check out this Jim Garlow endorsing. I guess he's going to endorse Mitt Romney. I predict that. But then again, he might endorse Obama. What a quandary that will leave us in, you know, thinking, wow. Because I don't know. It just seems as though, looking at it, that there are certain social positions that Obama has taken that may seem in conflict with the Skyline Church's social positions, especially on homosexuality, that Romney seems more conducive with. And it'll be interesting to see. I don't know. I personally will be surprised if he endorses Obama. He might. That would be really interesting. This is not meant for me to say that the Humanist Association endorses either Romney or Obama. I know that within our own group, that one certain candidate is more strongly supported, but I know that a couple people may be supporting another candidate. So I don't know. And then at the same time, that does not preclude the idea of third party candidates either. So this is going to be really interesting. I just can't wait to see who Garlow endorses. I can't wait to see what the blowback from that is. And so go tomorrow. Check that out. We're having a board meeting of the Humanist Association. It's sort of closed door, so we can just go through our agenda and just, you know, meet as a board for the first time in a long time. We've invited a few people who are really interested in volunteering. And if you hear this and you want to make any suggestions, email us. So I guess email us, humanistsd@gmail.com. Our website, sdhumanist.org, will be up and running again very soon. It's dangerously out of date. And, you know, I guess we'll talk. sdhumanist.org or humanistsd@gmail.com. Go check out the Skyline Church thing tomorrow. And we'll see what happens. So I guess in summation or something, that have a great day, and I'll be podcasting Sunday night. Bye. This has been a production of the Humanist Association of San Diego.